This is 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. It's 10 a.m. on Monday morning, and that means this is Herd Mentality. Joining me in the studio today, I have Grant Steinhauer, and he's going to be talking about his very interesting research into polyrhythmic perception, so he is our interesting person for the morning. And then in our second half, we have music inspired by water, so songs about water. So do stay tuned for that. Yeah, so I have Grant in the studio here with me. Grant is a student here at Tufts University. Good morning, Grant.
Good morning, Thomas. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah? It's so good to have you here.
Thanks for having me. It's great.
So for everybody at home who doesn't know what's going on, I am doing a new segment for the first half of my show where I will have an interesting person come in and I will talk to them about the interesting things.
Am I that interesting person?
You are that interesting person, right? That interesting thing that they do. So, Grant, you are a senior here at Tufts University.
I am.
And what's your major?
I'm a cognitive and brain science major.
Cognitive and brain science.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is that?
Yeah, good question. So a lot of people think that cognitive and brain science majors implies that we're, you know, neuroscience majors and that we're all going to med school and we're going to become neurosurgeons. But on the contrary, we kind of look at cognition through a lens that's a little more higher up. So instead of, you know, being on the ground looking at the brain and the composition of the brain itself, we're looking more at the cognitive mechanisms and theories that we've created to try to explain some of our, you know, cognitive phenomena.
Cognitive phenomena.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So like language acquisition, you know, how do we acquire language? Like what process do we do that? You know, how do we, you know, perceive faces to like how we do these things as opposed to like where in the physical brain these things occur.
Okay. And so if you figure out kind of how we do these things, maybe figure out why we do these things, we can make maybe machines that do these things.
Absolutely.
Or computers that can do these things.
Right.
Awesome. Very
exactly.
Cool. All right. So you're here today to talk about your research. So
yeah.
Polyrhythmic perception.
Mm-hmm.
Let's break that down.
Sure.
What is that?
Yeah. So I think a lot of us are familiar with what like a rhythm is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I ask you, Thomas, you know, to clap a rhythm, I bet you can come up with some type of groove, some type of rhythm.
I can get funky, yeah.
You can get funky. We can all get funky. And so most rhythms that we think of are inherently polyrhythms.
Okay.
And so basically, to define a polyrhythm is you have one stream of pulses or ticks going at some type of, some tempo.
Okay.
Right? And then simultaneously, you have another stream of ticks going at a different tempo.
Okay.
So when you have those two streams of ticks going at the same time, it creates what we could, something we could dance to, like a rhythm, something that is more sophisticated and complicated than just, you know, tick, tick, tick.
So you're saying
tick.
I shouldn't dance to a clock?
Right.
Okay.
Right, because dancing to a clock is for squares, and none of us are squares.
Hey, for all you squares out there, it's okay.
It's okay. It happens. We're all squares sometimes. But basically, yeah, so the research, what we're trying to do is kind of quantify human preferences for these polyrhythms. Like, you know, what rhythms do we like?
Okay.
You know, and what rhythms do we not like?
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, so let's just break apart this polyrhythmic thing real quick. Okay, so for people who are still confused, so can we do a simple, what's like the simplest thing?
So, the simple case is, that. What's that Christmas song?
Oh, yeah. This song right here, this.
Great, so that's a great example of a polyrhythm. So what's actually happening is there is a stream of pulses going at, you know, let's say it's going at 90 beats per minute. So, da, da, da. And then there's another stream of pulses going out 120 beats per minute. Something along those lines.
Okay.
I'm guesstimating. So when you put those together, it creates the da 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 da.
So you have one hand going da
So we don't, like, when we hear that, we don't perceive that as two separate things.
Right.
We see it in conjunction.
Okay.
But what's actually happening is you have one stream of ticks going slower than another stream of ticks in a particular ratio.
Right.
And that's creating this polyrhythm.
Okay. So we can mathematically, you know, describe these relationships.
So that kind of, you know, raises this next, you know, question, you know, what rhythms are we looking at? Like, right, there are infinite amount of rhythms.
Okay.
And so what the study is doing is, you know, like, where do we find these ratios? So we're finding these ratios based off of the ratios between harmonic frequencies of Western pitch.
Okay.
And notes. So, for example, you know, in Western, you know, harmonics, we have an A, which mm-hmm. is 440 hertz.
Cool. So right? That's cycles per second.
Exactly.
Okay, so a wave is going up and down 440 times in a second, hitting somebody's eardrum, vibrating that eardrum 440 times in 1 second.
Exactly.
We hear it as an A. That's all we need to know.
That's all we need to know.
Cool.
So each note obviously has some type of frequency relationship with another note.
Okay.
Right? So let's do like an octave, because mm-hmm. I know a lot of us are familiar with, like, you know, what an octave
sure.
is. You know, it's
okay.
something that we hear a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, and Thomas, maybe you can explain, you know, a little more of the physics, but, right, so an A is going at 440 hertz,
mm-hmm.
and an octave above that A, another A is going at 880 hertz.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
So we have 440 and we have 880.
Mm-hmm.
So that ratio is 2:1.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So if we take the bottom note, we multiply it by 2, we get this higher
exactly.
note. And if you superimpose the two of them, it'll sound pretty good, right?
Exactly.
I think we've all heard like an octave sounds like.
Right. And we're
gonna, like, a kid sings with their parent, you know?
Exactly.
Dad sings an octave, kid sings an octave. It's fine.
Exactly. So cool. An octave is just one example mm-hmm. of an interval that exists in Western pitch, you know, our Western pitch system.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can take every other interval that exists and also create some type of ratio out of them.
Okay.
So, for example, a perfect fifth, what we think of as, like, you know, Star Wars, right?
Do 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 is a do 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 do. Cool.
Right.
So that's a fifth. Those two notes.
Right. So that's a fifth. And so mm-hmm. that ratio, if you look at, you know, the hertz, just like what we did with the A,
mm-hmm.
is a 3:2 ratio.
Okay.
So now look. Now we're getting all these ratios based off, you know, a pre-existing system.
Okay.
It's pitch, not rhythm, but it's
right.
pitch.
Okay.
And so if we take every Western, you know, pitch note, so it goes, you know, do do do. I can't do it because I'm not a good singer, but like going chromatic, like do.
That's pretty good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
If you take each one of those intervals
yes.
and break it down to the ratio, you now have 12 ratios.
So you take all the 12 notes from the starting note up to an octave. You take all those notes
yeah.
and you compare them to that bottom note.
Yeah.
You have a mathematical ratio
exactly.
for each of them.
Exactly.
So we can quantitatively describe how these sounds are interacting in our brains. Be
absolutely.
Like, okay, I loved that perfect fifth.
Right.
That sounded great. When you dropped that a little bit, you made that a little closer
yeah,
to the root note,
so
it didn't sound as good.
Right, so that's really important. So
okay.
we take these 12 ratios that exist for pitch and we apply them to rhythm. And so basically what the study is trying to do is, like what you said, there are some pitch intervals that we find more pleasant than others. We really like octaves. We like perfect fifths. We like major thirds. But we don't like augmented fifths.
Okay.
Right? So what we're doing is, again, we're taking these ratios, we're applying them to rhythm, we're making a polyrhythm. So a 3:2 ratio, right, which is a perfect fifth
mm-hmm.
in a polyrhythm, is the same rhythm from that Christmas song, the da 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 da. And people like that rhythm because they can kind of groove to it. You
interesting.
Know? Da 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 da. You know where the underlying beat is. But
okay.
if you take, for example, a tritone, which is a augmented fourth.
Augmented fourth. That's the devil's note.
Devil's note. That
yikes.
That ratio happens to be 45:32.
Oof.
And if you make a polyrhythm out of that,
mm-hmm.
It's really hard to like figure out where that underlying beat is, and people don't like it because they can't really tap their foot to it, they can't really dance to it, they can't really groove
right.
to it.
Right. So if somebody wanted to pretend at home, take your right hand, beat, snap 45 times in a minute, take your left hand, snap 33 times, I think you can tell it's going to be kind of
yeah,
nasty.
It's a little all over the place.
Doing a lot of that.
Right. But so the whole thing is like, so we don't like that in pitch, we don't like it in rhythm, and we find that's like pretty consistent throughout all different types of intervals, and
mm-hmm.
you know, the question is like why? Like there's no rhyme or reason why we should like some ratios, you know, more or less than others. So that's basically where we're at so far.
Okay, cool. Let's take a quick break.
Love it.
right. Well, I'm in the studio here today with Grant Steinhauer, and we are talking about polyrhythmic perception. So, Grant, where were we just? We were talking about this relationship between rhythm and pitch, right? And kind of why it matters.
And so, again, you know, these pitch intervals, you like the sound of some of them, you apply the ratios that, you know, that can be...
Dreadful, done. Sorry, Grant, you were silent except for my ears, so let's start right over.
Hello.
First day on the board, kids.
Can you hear me now? We're
yes, you sound wonderful.
Thank God. But yeah, we're trying to figure out why we like some rhythms and why we like some pitch. And, you know, we can, again, deduce both polyrhythms and pitch intervals into ratios. And so, you know, why do we like some ratios? Why do we not like other ratios? And, you know, ratios exist in nature naturally. You know, there are some ratios that, you know, like the golden ratio is something that exists that just is a natural occurrence.
Okay, so that image of a nautilus shell spiraling in,
yeah.
Or the man in the circle,
right,
with his arms spread about.
Right, exactly.
These are images of iconic proportion because
exactly.
They just make sense to us.
They just make sense. But
okay.
Again, why do they make
why
sense?
Why do they make sense?
You know, and so I think that's kind of, you know, that's the end goal, right? Mm-hmm. We want to confirm that these ratios are really important for some reason.
Okay.
And once we can confirm that and, you know, make that a little more factual, like these ratios are, you know, here and we perceive them differently than we perceive other ratios, you know, and why is that? Like, what is the benefit? You know, how through evolution did that evolve and develop? You know,
right.
How did that give us some type of advantage?
Now that's interesting because, I mean, when you think about it, what really makes an interval sound good to us? Just two notes. Do we even know why that is?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think there are... I'm no expert on this yet, but I think the idea is, like, there's different... things resonate, and things
sure.
resonate differently with each other. So two mm-hmm. notes that we don't like, right? There's a unique resonance of that. And I'm under the assumption that there is a literal, obviously, a physical... right, component, whether that's in our ear or in our brain, that's vibrating. That vibration itself is an unpleasant vibration. It's kind of hard to, you know,
right.
think about that. You know, it's like a physically uncomfortable, you know, thing that you're experiencing. But that's essentially what is happening. Something's vibrating in your ear or in your brain, physically
right.
vibrating. That is not comfortable.
Well, have you found, at least through your research, that... Because I know musically, often the simple ratios, ones that break down into like really convenient numbers, mm-hmm. tend to sound better.
Yeah, so I think the question is are they actually convenient numbers?
Mm-hmm.
Like what makes numbers convenient? Like,
right.
I think we like doubling numbers, right? That seems convenient.
Yeah.
But, you know, something like 3 to 2, you know, in theory, is that really any more convenient than, let's say, like 9 to 8?
Okay, right, interesting.
Like 9 to 8 is just, you know, is you can almost argue is similar to 3 to 2 because it's just one, you know,
right.
one number off.
Right,
so
you shifted, it's n plus 1 over n.
Exactly. So
cool.
I think we kind of tell ourselves that there are convenient ratios because they exist more naturally than other ratios. But,
okay.
Right, it's almost like a chicken or the egg kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't think that these ratios are actually more convenient per se.
If I may, from the
yeah.
physics perspective
yeah.
over here. So we got the CVS side of the table, we got the physics side of the table. Just from a fundamental, like a waveform perspective. So like, if you have a wave, picture like starting at one point, going up, cresting, and then coming down at another point. If you superimpose a wave that has its endpoints that meet where those ones are, so we have these, what you'd call nodes. So if you're listening at home, picture like a string. If you vibrate a guitar string, you see these waves going up and down. Those are what we'd call standing waves on a string. And so if you pinch the string right at one of those nodes where the string seems to be standing still, the wave doesn't really change. It kind of just passes right through you. So if you stack a wave on top and you can line it up and still hold on to those same points, then that's like physically more desirable from you know, the laws of nature that govern our things. Or if you have the exact opposite, so where you would want to pinch it, you have the maximum amplitude of the string. So if it's going down, we'd call that being shifted by half a wavelength. So that can be desirable too. And so some instruments operate on this principle. They're either closed on both ends. So like a flute would be closed on one end. And so that's unique because the wave is basically pinched on one end and then the wave goes up and down on the other end where the you know, air is able to escape. And that's a lesson for another day. But just broad strokes, there are some fundamental reasons why it's possible.
Sure.
We might feel that these simple, you know, multiple relationships are desirable. Mm-hmm. Cool. So how did you figure this out? How were you able to be like, okay, well, people like this, but they don't like that?
Yeah, so the way we're basically testing people is it's actually really like a really simple procedure.
Okay.
We're basically saying that we sit someone down and we play them, you know, in a random, you know, fashion depending mm-hmm. on the participant.
Some kind of single blind.
Exactly. They okay. have no idea what's going on, but basically what they're told is they listen to a polyrhythm, you mm-hmm. know. And then they're asked to just rate it on its pleasantness, right, which is pretty vague and pretty
right.
abstract, from, you know, 0 to 5.
Okay.
And so, but what we also do is we also ask the participants to try to tap along to the polyrhythm using mm-hmm. like a mouse, like
okay.
a clicker.
Yep.
And so the idea is, you know, a lot of things that we find like pleasant, right? Mm-hmm. It's something that we can, like, again, like, tap our foot to and
foot
dance
tap
to.
Foot tapping music.
Right, foot tapping music.
Floor stomping music.
Mm, you love that type of music. So that's usually, like, what we like to quantify as pleasant. You can, like, you mm-hmm. can bounce to it, you can groove to it. So the idea is, if they rate a rhythm very pleasant, like a 5, they should be able to easily tap to it, right?
Okay.
And so, and you can obviously quantify that, right? So
sure.
if there's a polyrhythm going 60 beats per minute, they should be tapping it at 60 beats per minute or 120 beats per minute or 30 beats per minute.
So they can divide it by some factor.
Right.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be at, you know, 160 beats per minute.
So it's like you're asking them to play drummer. You're
exactly.
like, listen to a song, pretend you're the drummer.
Right. So it's like if you were to act like a metronome,
mm-hmm.
you know, how would you, you know, I'm gonna make metronome a verb, but how would you metronome this?
Yes.
And so
I like it. It should be a verb.
Right. Yeah. It's good. So those two things should be like, you know, a direct relationship, like how pleasant it is and like how accurate their ability to tap to it.
Okay.
So again, we have these two things just to, you know, kind of make sure that, you know, things are going smoothly and they understand what we're asking them, and we were able to confirm that, you know, there is a direct relationship between someone's ability to tap along to something and their choice to choose the rhythm as being pleasant. So,
okay.
So that's how we're basically testing it.
All right, so we got a lot of info here. Let's just recap so we don't miss anything.
Okay.
So polyrhythmic perception, mm-hmm. basically, from what I'm gathering here, is the idea that, like, if you take a rhythm, right, so let's go back to that Carol of the Bells example. We had a simple rhythm of a song, right? And we put that in a box,
yeah.
and we speed it up and go up to kind of the speed where a sound wave would be.
Yeah.
So now we have this sound wave and now it's a
tone.
An interval. All right.
Yeah.
And now it sounds like Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's dun dun. And that's great.
Yeah.
And we know that it sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of your research is to point and say, okay, we know this interval sounds good. We know people like this this polyrhythm. We like the way these beats interact, and we like the way these waves interact.
Right.
What's the connection?
Right.
Why does it matter?
Right.
Okay.
Why does it matter?
And do we know why it matters?
You know, there's a reason, you know, there's a reason why it matters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that once, you know, we can confirm some of these theories about our, like, preferences for these, I think we can pay less attention to trying to prove that we have preferences for ratios and
mm-hmm.
put a little more attention into, you know, like, why, and then, you know, why does this matter? And I assume the application is pretty, like, universal, you know?
Yeah. Okay, well, so this is interesting. So this, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind for me is, like, okay, what if we wanted to have a computer write a song? I'm pretty
yeah.
sure computers have written songs, right?
Yeah, they have. Yeah,
cool.
Too.
So I could see there's two ways you could do it. You could have a computer just listen to a bunch of music that it knows people like, right?
Yeah.
And so you could do that with, like, neural networks. That would be one way to do it.
Sure.
You'd have it learn and try to emulate what people do right.
Right.
Or, and I think this is kind of where your research would come in handy, you could say, here are some fundamental principles about music that humans like.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like, you could say, okay, robot, make me a super rhythmically complicated song,
mm-hmm.
but don't make it stink. I want to like it.
Mm.
And so you can take, and the robot will be like, okay, well, they like, they don't like 11 over 32, but they like 11 over 33.
Right.
And so we'll do that.
Right.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, this does, you know, happen already,
mm-hmm.
whether or not, you know, the robot or individuals know, like, this is what happens. But, you know, most modern music, like, you know, confines itself to, like, a pretty limited array of, like, polyrhythms.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, it might not be exactly a 3-2, but it could be a 3-2 for, like, the first 10 seconds, and then it could just, you know, deviate into another polyrhythm that we like and then go back to 3-2. But, you know, this does natural, again, the whole idea is this is like a natural occurrence, so individuals who make music gravitate towards these polyrhythms without them even knowing.
Right.
You know, very rarely do people make, you know, music with like 45-32 ratio polyrhythms, because it's just not something that they're used to, or it's not comprehensible.
Right. It's not like, hey, pick up some drumsticks, start making
like,
that
no
happen.
No one's doing that. But like, I never know the name of the Christmas song, but right?
Carol of the Bells.
Like, yes. They didn't say, oh, I want to make a 3-2 ratio polyrhythm. They just made a song rhythm that sounded comfortable, and it just happened to be, you know.
So we're kind of in the a chicken or an egg scenario, like you said. Yeah.
Right.
It's like we know intuitively that we like these things.
Right.
And we can make them. We make the things we like.
All the time.
But we're not sure why.
Yeah, we don't know why.
And we're finding that out.
We're going to find that out. We're going to figure out. It's going to be great. We're going to explore some things, uncover some things.
That is wonderful.
It's very exciting.
And I can only imagine it's, you know, more and more applicable as we live in this sonically interesting environment of our modern world.
Mm.
You know, we have phones going off, our cars beep at us every 2 seconds.
Right.
Interesting. I wonder if they do that. You know the beep in a car door? They're like, polyrhythm?
Yeah. Because...
But like with a rest.
Well, no. So don't think of it as like a rest.
Mm-hmm.
Think about like maybe the second duh of the first and the second duh of the other in that distance, right? So it's really slow, right? So it's duh, and then the other ticks go, and it's duh, duh. So yeah, it could actually be multiple different types of polyrhythms,
right,
depending on what duh you're starting.
So we've kind of hung out with polyrhythms of two,
right?
We can superimpose
absolutely
infinite,
right?
We just make a stream of beats that make no sense to anyone,
right? Exactly.
But that's interesting. So there's clearly applications in music. But maybe, you know, these people who are designing things to annoy us, right?
Right.
We've talked about how to make music that you want to hear.
Right.
How do you make things that people don't want to
really
hear?
Don't,
this is just as applicable.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, like, the first thing I was thinking of, which is pretty crazy, it's like, you think of, like, you know, in, like, torture camps, they play, like, you know, specific types of music to, you know, you get information from people and,
Torture Camp, my favorite summer
torture
movie.
Torture Camp,
coming in 3D.
Yeah. 2012 blockbuster hit. So you can see, like, in theory, like, utilizing some of this information, you know, for that, right? And we
can
play what we would consider the most, like, uncomfortable, you know, rhythm, and then, you know, play it, you know, just really loudly. And,
and
those two, you know, the loudness and intensity and the rhythm itself could be pretty annoying and probably get some people to say
some
stuff.
So this has some pretty serious psychological warfare implications.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yikes. Who knew? Does DARPA know about this?
They don't. So now I'm a little nervous because I just exposed it on the
air. You're on the air now.
Uh-oh. Okay.
All right. I think we're going to take one final break here, and then we'll come back and kind of tie it all together. What say you? Yeah?
Love it.
All right. And I'm still here with Mr. Grant Steinhauer here at Tufts University. We're wrapping up our wonderful conversation we've been having about polyrhythmic perception and the implications therein. So, Grant, you're doing this research now. Are you doing this for a thesis? Like, what's the end goal for you, at least?
It is my thesis.
Okay.
But regardless of at what point, you know, theses are confined to a time, which is the end of the year.
Yeah.
So wherever I get, I'm hoping that, you know, either I can continue the research or I can have another individual pick up where I left off.
Mm-hmm.
we obviously don't want to rush things unnecessarily.
Hey, sure, you know.
Yeah, you know, you can't do that.
Who is the professor you're working with?
So I am working with Professor Annie Rudd Patel.
Okay. And people could Google said person's
absolutely.
Name?
Absolutely. Professor Patel wrote a great book on music cognition. The name escapes me, but it's, you know, if you look it up, it'll be pretty easy.
So one more time, Annie.
Annie Rudd Patel.
All right. So everybody out there wants to learn more about our discussion today, keep it going, Google that.
Yes.
Hopefully find that wonderful book about acoustic and acoustic cognition.
Yeah.
There we go.
Some great stuff in there.
Cool.
Huge fan.
What are some other, you know, we got 5 minutes here. Yeah. What are some other cool things in the world of either cognitive brain science or acoustic
cognition? I was reading this really cool paper on hypnosis. Yeah, hypnosis is really cool. So, like, hypnosis people usually, like, roll their eyes out.
Yeah. People will often roll their eyes at hypnosis.
At hypnosis. But they found some really cool studies about hypnosis. Like, you know the Stroop test? Basically, it's you read a color.
Like a Stroop waffle?
Kind of, but not. It's like that test where you see, like, the word green,
okay,
and it's purple, like the word itself is like in a purple font,
okay,
and you're told in the test is you say the color of the word, not what the word reads.
Oh, that's
right. So you're like purple, and then you see the word red, etc. So what you do is, we're really bad at that. We're really slow because we want to read it before we want to say the color.
Okay.
But you can actually, there's a huge paper on, you basically hypnotize someone, mm-hmm, and have them do the Stroop test and tell them that the words they see are just going to be random blocks. They're just, you know, they're not going to be English. They're going to be in a different language. You basically hypnotize them into not being able to read.
Okay.
Right? And then you tell them to, you know, open their eyes, and you have them do the Stroop test, and they're much better at it because they're not reading the words anymore, or they've been hypnotized not to read the words.
So are you telling me that through hypnosis,
yeah,
you can have somebody shut off a part of your brain?
Right.
As long as you're okay with it?
Absolutely. That, so, like, think about,
nuts,
like, the implications of that. I mean, like, when you think of hypnosis, you usually think of people doing, like, silly stuff. So
right,
the part of the brain that you're shutting down is that, like, inhibition to do silly stuff.
Okay.
Right? So you shut that down, they do silly stuff. So it's the same idea. So think about that, you know, what we can do with hypnosis on, you know, if we can shut different parts of their brain down, you know, think about some of the things, like,
okay,
like with, like drug addiction,
right,
and things,
anxiety,
like that. And anxiety, you can, like, you know, somewhat shut that part of the brain down.
Okay, yeah. Somebody can't get to sleep at night, right?
Right.
What if you could,
you know,
take that part of the brain,
right?
Like,
just like, go away. That's been some cool stuff in CBS world. That I heard about recently.
That is very cool stuff.
Yeah. Hypnosis is cool.
Yeah.
I want to get hypnotized.
Have you been hypnotized?
No, I haven't.
No?
I'm afraid I'd get too nervous.
Well, maybe they can help you out with that.
Yeah, I guess.
You need somebody to hypnotize you, and then that will get you prepared for the next hypnotist,
yeah,
and
yeah,
so on and so,
yeah,
forth. You'll eventually get there.
Yeah.
Down the inception well.
I hope so.
Of hypnosis.
Yeah, it's a long time. But yeah, that's some cool stuff.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today,
course,
Grant. This has been a lot of fun.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Thomas.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so you are my first guest.
Mm.
What'd you think?
It was great.
This was fun?
So casual. So
all right. Well, I am flattered. Hopefully, we'll be doing more of this in the future as I have more and more people. I have another prospective guest lined up, hopefully for next week, that we can chat about. So I will blast everybody who knows me on Facebook about that. And maybe I'll get a little tweeter or something going here, so people who don't know me can follow along.
A little tweeter?
A little tweeter.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Herd Mentality. This is our first hour coming, half hour coming to a close here from the top floor of Curtis Hall at the wonderful Tufts University here. Wonderful, gorgeous blue sky day coming at. So we're going to take a quick break, and then coming back in the second half of the show, it's going to be my music portion of the show. Well, I'll play some tracks about themes relating to water. All right. Thank you so much for listening.
Hey, America. We need to have a little talk. We've got more food in our country than we know what to do with. Food at the grocery store and food in the vending machines, fast food, health food, and seafood. We've got so much food that anything people don't buy, we just throw out. Yet 17 million kids in America struggle with hunger. That ain't right. Luckily, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks has volunteers gathering excess food and getting it to hungry kids. They're kind of like food angels. Yeah, I made that up. It's kind of catchy. Hello, people. This isn't rocket science. We could solve hunger today. To start, become a food angel yourself by supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. That's a website. Duh. We can't do it without your help. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
And that was the wonderful Ra Ra Riot featuring Rostam with their song Water. Now, maybe if you're like me, you were doing some polyrhythmic perception in your brain just then, kind of pulling it apart. So hopefully now you're way better equipped to mathematically overanalyze your music. I know I am. So thank you, Grant, who is now hanging out in the studio with me. All right, so this show is about water today. We're just playing music of and related to. That was the wonderful Ra Ra Riot, American indie rock band out of Syracuse. They are not on tour right now. I wish I could tell you more about them. But that song was with Rostam, the one of the other showrunners over at Vampire Weekend, the band formerly known as Vampire Weekend. So he's been hopping around and helping people out on various stuff, which I think is very cool. Very cool of him to do. So we'll just keep it rolling, keep it going with, you know, another 25 minutes or so of wholesome musical fun. All right, back to the music.
I think there's something in the water. It could be something in the air, but there's none to be found in the dirt, on the ground, in the choices I've made. All right, Hawk, anyway, hey, I think it must be the water.
Until it all makes sense, and it's all you can do to keep your head above it.
Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks with that classic tune, Water and Deceit. Stephen Malkmus, the father of West Coast indie rock, in my opinion, with his loosey-goosey style. And then before that, we were listening to The Jealous Girlfriends with Something in the Water, a song I just dug out from my memory banks, because I think I heard that first in, like, 2006 on a Grey's Anatomy soundtrack, so always good to unearth old hits like that. Some more music about water here today on this gorgeous blue sky day. Yeah, can't beat it, really. Can't beat it.
Space.
The classic Stone Roses back there with that song, Waterfall. Stone Roses out of the early 80s scene out of Manchester, England. Wonderful guys. Delightful sound. I'd be awful remiss if I didn't just quickly express all of WMFO's love and sympathy and absolute shock at the tragedy in Las Vegas last night. Just sending all our compassion their way for everybody who was affected. Really, really makes you kind of, I don't even know, you can't really say anything about it. Just, you wake up and tragic things happen. So, what else to say? Nothing else to say. But here's a softer song that I guess we can send out to everybody who's still reeling right now. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. This is Ben Hurd Mentality. Thank you so much for listening. And once again, we send all our love out to everyone still reeling from last night's events. I hope everyone out there can enjoy and cope and have a wonderful Monday and rest of your week. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Thomas Keller.
Sure you'll be rummaging through. And I said the shit shot her.